C-167. Number 5A.
The chapter on spiritualism shows for the first time, really, that there is only one spirit and that everything is spiritual and that matter is non-existent. That's for the very first time after 70 pages that Mrs. Eddy now states clearly that matter is out of question, that matter finds its climax in illusion, that it is illusive. So that for spirit there is no matter. Actually, this gives a whole new aspect on being. The moment we have no more duality, then we can calculate right from the oneness of being, and that is what the chapter on spiritualism does. In the first part, therefore, spirit will first have to tell us what then constitutes reality. Is reality constituted of people, of matter, of stars, of galaxy? Is reality consisted of rivers and lakes and mountains and trees and animals? Or what constitutes reality? What are the constituents of being? The moment we ask that, then she says for the first time here that nothing is real but God and his ideas. So now we are introduced into the realm of ideas and says that actually only ideas are real. Everything else is not real. Therefore, it does away with the reality so-called of matter, but it also does away with the so-called human qualities and humanity as reality, and says the only reality is spirit and the spiritual. Now, the first part does actually that to say first, now, what are the constituents of reality? And we go through those subjects quickly and remind ourselves what Mrs. Eddy says in the textbook at the tone of mind, which is, so to say, giving the cornerstone for the chapter. She says that the identities of being, that's soul and life, are ideas of mind. So actually only ideas constitute reality. These ideas are the things of God, so to say, the things that are. These are never in a finite form. Ideas are never in matter, in body, in people, in anything, because they are only in God. So that is the very first point that we have to see. Therefore, she would conclude that material things are not ideas. They must be the opposite of ideas. Therefore, material things must be illusive, illusion, dream stuff. It's a hypnosis state of mind. That's all there is. Then we go to spirit and see spirit can only communicate itself through a spiritual sense of life, spiritual sense, soul, of life, life. So we have here soul and life from the aspect of spirit, not through its opposite, the material sense of existence. We have here a very fine distinction between the identity of being and the elusive constituents of being, namely only the spiritual is that which constitutes the identities of being, and therefore they communicate only spiritually and not through its opposite matter. So we come to that spirit communication, that spirit communicates itself only spiritually, that spirit does not need its opposite as a channel or as a medium through which to operate. Therefore it does not operate through a material medium, through a material nature. It communicates really only through spirit, and that is good. That's why she says here that most interesting point, that good, scientific good, not the humanly good, that scientific good can pass from the departed to those that are left behind. which is very natural. There is nothing mysterious about it, because good is all. Spirit is all, and therefore communicates itself as spirit. So because spirit does not know a time nor space sense, therefore time doesn't make any difference, space doesn't make any difference, and we know that. How do we communicate with a patient? Mostly spiritual. And the more we communicate with the patient spiritually and not through words and through letters and through long telephone calls, etc., but through the spiritual communication, the stronger our communication is. So again we see, what is reality? At this point it is spiritual and only spiritual. Then we come to the third subject, a very interesting subject of soul. We have here that because for spirit there is no matter, no opposite, there can be no backward transformation. We come now to soul that transforms and says there is no backward transformation from spirit to matter, from an immortal to a mortal. That would be a backward transformation, going back in the evolution. So that there is no backward transformation from a spiritual into a material sense of existence. We can see in the measure as we nurture the spiritual, we can only go forward. So that death is not a point where we can go backward, but only a point where we can go forward. Every day is only an opportunity to go forward. We can never go backward. Once we have learned how to ride a bicycle, we never forget it. We can't go back and say, I have to first to learn it. What is made our own stays and cannot be taken away from us again. So that text there is full of those suggestions that there is a backward transformation. He said it cannot, that soul, because it does not change its nature, there is no backward transformation, no retrogression. Once an acorn has become an oak, it does not unfold backward and become again an acorn. As he says, there is no backward transmutation. Once a butterfly has left the caterpillar, it does not return to the caterpillar. The caterpillar just dies out. So there is no backward transmutation, no transference really from a spiritual sense back to a material sense of existence. Whatever we have gained spiritually will stay with us. Can no more be taken away from us. We cannot fall back to positions outgrown. The whole text is therefore full that there is no retrograde step, that there is not a return to position outgrown, not a return to old condition, no relapse. So we can see here, what is reality? What are the identities of being? At the point of soul, they say they are changeless. They cannot change their form backward. There is only a way forward. Then we come to the fourth of principle, which seems to be not in the text, and so we come to the next one, to life, and that is a terrific subject where we see that the understanding that life is incorporeal, again you have the identities of being, namely life and soul, life. And incorporeal is the fact about soul, that soul is incorporeal, that soul has not a body. If that is once understood, that life does not need a body to be life, to live. If that is understood, then, and that therefore that it can neither live nor die in a body, awakens from the belief of death. Here you have the tone of life. It wakes from the belief of death. We take a completely wrong starting point when we say here we live and we would have to like to have life eternal. Is there a life after death? How can I demonstrate life after death? Will I live after death on? In what state will I be after death? What is then my consciousness after death? And this is all a wrong standpoint, because when Jesus resurrected Lazarus from what is called death. Mrs. Eddy says that Jesus never believed that Lazarus ever lived in the body. Therefore, he didn't need to resurrect him out of a body. There was no resurrection of life out of the body taking place. He went right back to the fundamental standpoint and said, life is incorporeal. If life is incorporeal, then it was never in the body, and therefore it has not to be resurrected out of the body. And in the same vein, we can see we don't have to make a sick body healthy, because sickness is saying that health was in body. Well, health was never in body. Therefore, we don't have to resurrect health out of sickness. This is a false sense of exaltation and resurrection. We have to see that health has never been in the body, that health has never been corporeal, and therefore that health was always in the state of being immortal and having the nature of beingness. Always, health was always. So it could never really be transformed back to sickness. That's why you had first that main tone of soul of no backward transformation from health to sickness. And here it is in regard to life that Jesus could see that really Lazarus never lived in the body, therefore could never die in the body, and therefore never needed to be resurrected out of a body. So we have always to be very clear about our presuppositions which we make in working out something. Are we going out from a standpoint, a point of view that is already wrong? That is always the question. If we go out from a standpoint that is wrong, then we ask the wrong questions, and the wrong questions cannot be answered. So be careful that always the standpoint from which we go out is first stated rightly. And here in spiritualism, she states it rightly. She says, well, the identities of being is life, and that life is incorporeal. Therefore, it has never anything to do with the body. So here we get that great sense of life going on, life being always bodiless, so we don't have to ask what is then after death, because in that question, what is after death, we already accept that we feel that life must have a body. What kind of body will we have? What kind of form will we have? What kind of experience will we have? And we are always thinking about the corporeal experience. Whereas we should really see that there was right from the beginning nothing else but the isness of life. And that isness of life is of the nature of soul, namely incorporeal. And that can neither die, that has no beginning, no end. So we have never been born into matter, we never need to be live out of matter, and therefore there is not a question of what is after death. That's a wrong question. We have to ask, what is life? What is incorporeal life? And that is a question that is of an immortal nature and will stay with us. Then we come to the next tone of truth, where Mrs. Eddy introduces for the first time the question that man, we are at the tone of truth, always man comes up at the point of truth, that man is actually idea. This she hasn't said up to this point. So our epitome here is an understanding of man's immortal life does what? It destroys the consciousness of man's mortal existence. So it destroys the consciousness. It does not destroy man, but it destroys a false consciousness. Therefore, under soul and life, we see what are the realities of being, what are the identities of being. At the point of truth, we see man is idea. Man is spiritual consciousness. and not mortal consciousness. And so introduces, so to say, the self-destruction of error. If we see that truth is the only true consciousness, then we can no more have a consciousness of error. It's always the same thing. We don't have to fight against error and kill error. We have to have a true starting point, which is truth, and that truth does not know error, does not know an erroneous consciousness, and if you are one with that truth, then we lose a sense of a mortal consciousness. The last subject then takes up the question of love as being all and evil being nothing. Love is always either all or nothing. That's what happens there. Here, before the all-embracing spirit, spiritualism is found to be nothing. Now she does it away and reduces spiritualism, which is the belief that there is an other identity of being than spirit, that matter is an identity of being, that mortal belief is an identity of being. It reduces that right to the nothingness, because in love that says, I'm all, therefore I'm all, namely all identities of being. I include them all. And with that, within that allness, love really holds the irresistible fulfillment in herself. Yeah. This is first stating the constituents of being. So we can say, really, perhaps in other terms, when we go through that first part that always has that overtone in our consciousness, what does really exist which is immovable? What does really exist, life, that is unchangeable, on which I can rely? Soul. So constantly, soul and life are the predominant tone in it. And says, well, this identity of being, I can trace back to the one mind. So if mind would not be the identity of being, then we would have other minds, minds mortal. If spirit is not the identity of being, then matter would also be would also have reality. If soul would not be the identity of being, unchangeable, we would have constant false transformation, translation, constantly the translation of the spiritual into the material, the fall of man. That's the original sin, the fall of man, the fall that is the belief that soul is not the identity of being and therefore could be changed to the worse. Or if we see that life is the identity of being, then we see very clearly that there is no death, that there cannot be death, that there cannot be birth, nor maturity, nor decay, nor death, nor after death, that life is the identity of being and being is eternal. And you touch the tone of the fifth subject. Or truth, that we say, well, if truth is the identity of being, and we more or less never deny that truth is really something that exists, but if truth is the identity of being, then error cannot exist. And it's just not possible that error can exist. And so it resolves that. And if we see that love is the identity of being, then we can see that love always blesses, that love cannot do anything but to bless the whole universe and save the whole universe. Therefore, everything that is of the nature of a curse, that is of the nature of evil, that is of the nature of error, that is of the nature of maliciousness, of envy and jealousy and hate, just has no beingness, is nothing. So that all the opposites of God are seen to be a nothingness, not something that we have to overcome. Something that does not exist because it has no identity of being. This part, as I have gone through now, right now, over the last 3 or 4 minutes, is so deep that if you try to think it out for yourself in a quiet moment, you feel a tremendous impact of strength and power and authority, and it becomes so natural that if we think scientifically, namely from the point of view of what is, that's scientific, if we don't start out from beliefs, that we believe something may be so and so, if we start out from a scientific standpoint, we have as soul and life, namely of those things that are life and that are absolutely unchangeable from everlasting to everlasting, unchangeable, then we are asking the question about what are the things that exist. And it says, that which exists is mind, and mind can never change itself, can never become mortal mind. So there is no possibility that there has ever been a mortal mind. So that we see the identity of being is spirit, and spirit cannot change, therefore it can never be its opposite or use its opposite. Matter just can't exist. If we go out from that very fact of the identity of being, of that which is and everlasting is, then we see in soul that there cannot be a backward transformation taking place, that there is no a fallen man and a fallen universe. It cannot be. That sense of a fallen man just is nothing, does not exist. And so in life we see that if life, capital L, God, is the identity of being, then we see that there cannot be such a thing as death, that death is nothing. So that every question about death is really just fooling oneself with false questions and false answers. Just fooling ourselves. Because if life is, there is no death, full stop. Therefore, death has no existence. Or if we see that the identity of being, that which has the nature of isness, of existence, of unchangeable existence, is the truth, God, truth, then its opposite, error, cannot exist. There never was an error. Not only we believe that there can be an error and that we make mistakes and so on. Only we believe that. But it has never existed. It is nothing. And so it is with love. If love is the identity of being and never changes, then love is always love. Then love cannot change to be not love. And therefore there is always the grace of God, the gift of God, the blessings of God going on. And it is absolutely impossible that anything contrary to that, like envy and jealousy and hate and incompleteness, frustration, etc., can go on. It's absolutely impossible. Do you get the tone of this fourth chapter, that it is very different than the first three chapters? The first three chapters just showed, if you start out as a mortal, I can lead you really to God. I have a method to lead you to God, namely through prayer, atonement, Eucharist, and marriage. I can lead you to see that you have built on false foundation. And in the fourth chapter, I show you what reality is. What is reality? The one and only Spirit. At the point here in the first part of soul and life, that they are identities that ever are, that ever are, that ever are, and therefore its opposite can't be. Can't be. Which brings us to the second part, which shows quite a different picture. That second part can only really be understood properly when we see it as the consequence of the first part. If Mrs. Eddy has stated what the things of being are, what constitute the things of being, then she has to answer also to mortal mind, which does not accept that. Because mortal mind says there are other things at work than the identities of being that are spiritual. Because, and that perhaps is the main point, because in the realm of belief, other things are possible. In the realm of belief, many phenomena can be shown forth that are the same phenomena as those that the identities of being are bringing forth. And that is what she takes up in the second part. So, first of all, we want to see what that second part is all about. We have in that column as a title, Mind and Truth. Mind and Truth, which would say, only that is true which I can understand from the point of view of the divine mind. All that which I see seems to be true from the point of view of mortal mind and the human mind is not real, though you can experience those phenomena. That's the trick in here. You see that people will come and say, you know, with mortal mind, I can also do the tricks that I want to do, those tricks that say I can heal with matter. I can heal as a psychology, as a psychiatrist. I can heal with positive thinking. I can heal with all kinds and ways and means that are material and that are mental. I can produce the same phenomena. Medical science produces healing. We can't say no. We just have to go into a hospital and see what today the doctors do, what the surgeons can do, and we can't say they don't produce positive phenomena. The question is, are these phenomena real? Do they belong into the realm of reality, or do they belong into the realm of belief, into the belief universe? So Mrs. Eddy starts out through the seventh subject and always shows one thing in every one of them, that we cannot reason from the phenomena. That if we reason from the phenomena, we will be fooled over and over and over. So the very first example which she gives is here, as you remember, mind, where we said that Christian science bases itself on the intelligence of the mind of Christ, whereas spiritualism bases itself on human beliefs and hypotheses and hypnotism. That mind controls the body. Divine mind controls the body, and the human mind controls the body too. So there we have two. We have one phenomena, namely the control of the body, and yet they are two very different things. One is the human mind controlling the body in the realm of mentality. The divine mind controlling the body is in the realm of spirituality.